family is something that's personally very important. It's the lifeblood of the church, really. It's the building block of church, and I think we need to nourish family life. And I think one of the things that Pope Francis has helped us to see is that it's not just about the care of those who are doing great, thank God. You know, there are many families, as he says, you know, who are very committed and faithful to what the church presents in terms of the sacrament of marriage and the upbringing of children and so on. There are others who are not just quite there, or who for some reason or other haven't chosen that path, and yet you come across openness there. And Pope Francis is all the time saying to us, you know, that we need to find the points of goodness and strength in, you know, relationships, you know, even in couples who are bringing their children to school, in Catholic schools, who themselves may not be married. Pope Francis would be saying, you know, that they may still in their family lives reflect great levels of commitment and sacrifice, and they may be teaching their children to pray. And, you know, those are things that we need to build on. So the big challenge for us in the World Meeting of Families is to include rather than to exclude.
Having talked to different dioceses in different parts of the country, I've seen that spirit of inclusion, certainly, and it's very encouraging. Do you think that's resonating and getting through to people on the ground?
I think it is. I, you know, and people always appreciate it, you know, when they feel included. The difficulty is sometimes people expect the church sort of not to actually teach what the church believes, and that somehow or other, that if the church does, then it, in some way we're excluding people. You know, the issue of ethos, whether it's schools or whether it's in, you know, agencies of one sort or another, or in hospitals or whatever, it's not about defining other people. It's not about saying, you know, this is what you ought to be. Mm-hmm. It's about saying this is who we are. And because of who we are, these are the things that we do. And actually, these are some of the things that we don't do. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think it's perfectly legitimate for the church to stand up and say, well, this is who we are.
When you look at other denominations and other faiths, maybe you say the Baptists or whatever, mm-hmm. who are very good at fellowship and outreach and so on, do you feel a sense of calling maybe to replicate that or imitate that within, or do you feel it's already covered within the church?
Well, I think sometimes small is beautiful, you know, in the sense that when you have relatively small numbers, there can be associated with that a greater sense of belonging. And, you know, I think there, for instance, I'd have very close connections with the Church of Ireland in the area of our diocese. The Church of Ireland bishop is actually a bishop in Kilmore, Arda and Elphin, so he covers a huge territory. But we chat fairly frequently, and I know that there are very many challenges facing the Church of Ireland community precisely because they're small. But the other side of it is they all know one another well, and I think it's probably, it's easier to say to people in that kind of context, you have to make a decision, you're either in or you're not. Whereas within the Catholic Church, there's always been that sort of sense that someone else will do it, because there are so many of us, you know, and in a certain sense...
Do you think that's changing now?
Well, I think it is, because nobody's putting leverage or pressure on anybody, you know, say, to come. There's no social pressure to come to Mass on Sunday. Anyone who's there is there because they want to be there. And I think the people who are there, you know, recognise that they actually have to, you know, build a community. But you still do find, one of the things I find is, you know, the way in a large church people kind of scatter and they'll all be all over the place, and it's almost impossible to get Catholics to sing in the church. You know, I sometimes envy, you know, the Church of Ireland gift that they have somehow or other for singing, you know.
Yeah, it's funny when you start, maybe you find yourself in a pew singing, you feel like you're the only guy, and you know that you're out of tune, that kind of thing. You know, sort of very self-conscious. So a lot of people know they can't sing. But I mean, maybe is singing a great way of warming things up? Or do you?
Well, I think it lifts up people's hearts. You know, music, you know, certainly does. And you know, in fairness, I'd say a lot of the reason why people don't sing is because they like to listen to the choir.
Yeah.
And there's just that sort of sense that, you know, maybe that's part of this thing of letting other people do it. I think certainly the future of the church is in, you know, people participating actively. Doesn't mean everybody has to be up doing prayers or readings or whatever, but that you know, you're there as an active participant rather than just someone who's getting mass, if you know what I mean.
In closing, vocations, how are you doing in your diocese? It's not a metric so much as...
No, it's not.
I don't mean it like to sound like that either.
I suppose I would be a bit disappointed. You know, I'm realistic enough to know that if there isn't a very strong ministry to young people, that it's hard to expect that there's going to be, you know, a response at the level of committed vocations. And I think the two things go together.
The permanent diaconate, is that helping in any way?
Yeah, well, the permanent diaconate has certainly been very effective in the diocese. It's small numbers and stuff, but I mean, obviously, the deacon was never intended to replace the priest. It's meant to be, you know, parallel to that. But the, I mean, we have two seminarians for the diocese. And I suppose, in a sense, if we had two seminarians all the time, it wouldn't be, you know, a major problem. But obviously, we've been very, you know, advanced age group of priests who are, many of them coming to the end of their priestly ministry, and at the moment we're depending on borrowing, you know, priests from Africa and Asia, which in the west of Ireland is kind of, the pennies beginning to drop a bit with people. But still, I find when I go to parishes, and I always mention, I'd say, look, you know, look at Father John here, I said, I just invite you to, first of all, value, you know, who he is as a person and as a priest, and ask yourselves, you know, when the time comes for him to move on, and I'm not saying it's going to be, you know, this year or whatever, but when the time comes, who's going to come in his place? And I would always say to people, look, I don't have a drawer full of priests up in St. Mary's. That's, you know, that's not the way it works, is it? Because priests in the future will always come from where they came from in the past, which is out of homes like yours and out of families like yours. And if they're not going to come from there, they're not going to come at all. And so I'd be putting it up to people, you know, but I think there's a tendency to assume that it'll always be somebody else's son. And the thing that disappoints me a little bit is, you know, we've had situations, say, for instance, we had a relatively young priest in his 50s who died just this time last year after a long illness, and huge numbers of people turned out at his funeral, and there was a great outpouring of appreciation for the man and for the priest, and people talking about how really wonderful he was to them. And yet it didn't seem to dawn on people that actually, yeah, that would be a worthwhile way of life for me or for my son or for my nephew or whatever. And the strange thing is, for all that people talk about the challenges and difficulties associated with married life, nobody seems to be unduly negative about the idea of leading their daughter up the aisle, you know, in marriage. I don't understand to some extent why people seem to think the priesthood is, you know, a sad, lonely existence. It hasn't certainly been my experience.
Yeah. 2.5 years in, what's happening? What's going to happen in the next 2.5 years? Just to close up.
It'd be very hard to sort of see down the road. You know, I would say to some extent after 2.5 years, you know, I'm sufficiently established that I have a better sense of the diocese and what I'd like to see happening. As I say, the catechetics program, I think, is an important part of that. I think a new ministry to the family is going to be an important part of it. I think we're probably going to have to try and look at new ways of priests ministering in some kind of partnership. But I'm very committed to the idea that parishes, insofar as at all possible, will have an identifiable priest, and they could say, this is our priest. I don't like this thing of just parachuting people in at the weekend. But I think people are certainly going to have to get used to the fact that we're not going to be able to just put on extra masses or funerals or, you know, things, novenas at the drop of a hat, because there's only so far that you can stretch individual priests. That's one of the things I'm very conscious of, is I have to look after the priests that I have, because they wouldn't necessarily be always great at looking after themselves.